Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Bugle Ashes Zoltzcast official world exclusive preview of the fourth test of the 2023 Men's Ashes. I am Andy Zoltzman, and I've spent the last week just generally trying to soothe my fervid soul after the emotional upheavals of the first three tests in what is, I think, already been one of the classic test series, almost regardless of what happens in the next two test matches. We also had the Women's Ashes, another series where pretty much every game has been nip and tuck and could have gone either way. Australia have retained the Ashes as we record. They're about to play the final game. England could still draw the series. Chris was at the decisive game in Southampton. We'll talk about that shortly. But the margins of in this series have just been spectacularly close, as I mentioned before. The three tests could all be won by either side. The first innings gaps have been small. 7 runs in Birmingham, 91 at Lords, 26 at Edgbaston. There had only been 6 Ashes tests with a first innings gap below 30 runs in the last 20 series combined since 1985. We've had 2 in 3 tests in this series. The last time we had 2 games in a series with first innings leads below 30 was 1926, and one of those was ended by rain with the first innings incomplete. Before that, you've got to go back to 1909. We have been blessed with some classic contests. I'm joined by Chris Addison and Nish Kumar, fresh from recording this week's actual Bugle, to talk about the stuff that really matters, the cricket, which has been gloriously distracting for the past few weeks. How have you both coped with the emotional, literal roller coaster?
I think the scheduling is very strange, and there's a lot to be said about it. But I do think this break has been good for players and audience.
yeah. I mean, both series, I just find myself. It's the most stressful I remember cricket being.
Yeah.
Like since we went, you and I, Andy, to the 2005 Oval Test, where every session of that was up and down. Like there wasn't, nobody was dominant at any point in that game. And for 5 days, it felt, you know, your heart was in your mouth with every bowled ball. And that's, I just feel like that with this. I think that breakneck pace of the first three tests was just brutal on everybody. I'm surprised that cardiologists haven't been really cashing in here.
Yeah. And there are sort of similarities with that 2005 series. You mentioned that Oval Test and how that fluctuated. Yeah. And that was the fourth most exciting of the 5 games in that series, essentially. So, and again, that had 3 back-to-back really close finishes, one of which was a draw with Australia 9 wickets down. It's just been kind of so glorious in terms of what I often talk about how almost the greatest thing about Test cricket is the variety of narrative in it, and the way that the story of a game just shifts with every ball. I think this series has sort of shown that cricket's unique selling point, which cricket administrators seem to view as its unique weakness point, has been on just glorious display.
I was at the Test at Lords and watched an hour of just some of the stupidest batting I've ever seen. I was there with Ahir Shah, who described England's batting tactics as the Australians repeatedly putting some leaves over a hole in the ground and a sign up saying "no hole, step confidently," and just batsman after batsman kept stepping into the sort of short pitch bowling. Ben Stokes has committed a couple of acts of GBH on the ball. across the test matches. But yeah, it's been an unbelievably tight series. I think England have finally seen sense and played Mark Wood, because I think England's bowling attack without Jofra Archer in it is quite literally one-paced, and it severely lacks variety. But bringing Wood in, I think just makes a huge amount of sense. And he bowled f***ing fast. That was f***ing fast.
It was like in a really tight-fought medieval jousting competition, suddenly bringing in someone in a Spitfire. That sort of changed the weaponry involved and gave England an edge they didn't have before. What's in terms of having someone hurl a hard, round object at you at 95 miles an hour? Yeah. What's the closest you've had? Obviously, I had my own sort of equivalent of that at the Manchester Comedy Store in December 2003. Yeah. It felt like there were 400 people chucking cricket balls at my head at 95 miles an hour. But what's the closest you've experienced to that?
I think that's it. I think it would have been probably on stage. But aside from that, the day that I realised I was never going to play cricket was in my, I'm going to say, sort of mid-teens maybe. And my friend Bob, who was an excellent cricketer, said, "Oh, it's really easy. Look, I'll bowl a ball at you." And he bowled a ball at me. And that was it. That was the end of that. There is no way that I'm standing there and someone doing that repeatedly. I just find it astonishing. And when Wood comes out, you can see everybody, you know, even the most sort of fearless and set batters looking, oh Christ, what's going to happen now?
Yeah, and it does seem absurd, because you talk the difference between, you know, low 80s and low 90s. It's, you know, it's whatever, 0.2 of a second in terms of your reaction time. But it really seems to make a difference. He bowled fast, but you also bowled full and straight. You know, it wasn't even as if you could sort of just duck out of the way of it. I think that could be a kind of series changing moment.
Sky did an interesting thing where, because I have the picture on, and don't worry, Andy, I've got TMS on. Actually, do you know what? This is really weird. Right now, right at this second, is one of the two times ever that I've been on TMS more recently than you. But Sky had this, one of their sort of Hawkeye-style graphics, where they showed the batter's perspective of a Mark Wood delivery and the speed at which it happens. And it is, I mean, unbelievably terrifying. Like, you think it's fast when you look at it, but when you sort of see it coming foreshortened at you, you know, just growing in size over less than a second, utterly terrifying.
Yes, and this is also from a man who has been known to ride an imaginary horse around the outfield during international cricket. He's one of the great characters in the history of cricket.
Yeah,
I would say a glorious human being.
If we're looking for more 2005 precedents, somebody needs to roll a ball in the immediate path of Pat Cummings and hope it steps on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we thought the Nathan Lyon thing was that equivalent, didn't we?
Yeah,
but actually,
yeah,
as it turns out, no.
So, looking ahead now to Old Trafford, England have selected Jimmy Anderson, the almost 41-year-old miracle of human endurance. It means that the team England have picked have a combined career tally of 1,974 test wickets, ranging from Anderson's 688, Broad's 598, to Harry Brooks' 1. This is a new record for the most career wickets in a test team, breaking the record England set at Edgbaston in the first test this summer, of 1,777. Aren't spreadsheets fun, people? This is how I spend my evenings now. It is extraordinary that we have these two players who we had with the tennis, Carlos Alcaraz won Wimbledon, and the last time anyone won Wimbledon who wasn't Djokovic, Nadal, Murray or Federer, Alcaraz hadn't even been born. Jimmy Anderson made his international debut before Roger Federer won his first Wimbledon. And is still going 688 test wickets later. It's inspiring for us all. I said I do think he is probably nearer the end of his career than the start now, without even having a date on his retirement. But I mean, that would be a great story if Anderson, he has a name that ends named after him at Old Trafford, home county ground. If he could, you know, make a massive contribution to continue England's fight back.
I can't help feeling that that might be his last Ashes match. Not sure that he's thinking of it in those terms, but like, you know, if it doesn't go well and they change him out for the Oval, then I don't think we'll see him in Australia. Right. And I think we're possibly looking at the end of his career, which seems so weird because he's been around for 22 years. Yeah. So it's sort of hard to imagine. It's like when the Queen died. You went, oh, right, there was that thing that was around all the time and I just assumed it would go on forever. Jimmy Anderson's retirement, I think, will be the same. And people should queue for that amount of time to pay their respects to Jimmy Anderson's career, where finally it is brought to an end.
Yeah, just file past his stats written, carved in
wood. Yeah, in Westminster Hall, they should just put up a copy of Wisden and everybody can just sort of file past it.
Yeah, he made his debut in 2000, before you got married, Chris.
Yeah.
And you're heading towards your 20th anniversary this year.
Yeah.
His international debut the winter before in one-day cricket test debut in 2003 in the summer. It is absolutely extraordinary. Here was a lovely stat from the previous test. All Australia's wickets, all 20 wickets, were taken by bowlers over the age of 33 plus.
That's our entire attack now for this. The Manchester test.
Yeah.
Everybody's over 33.
It was the first time in Test history that a team had taken 20 wickets by bowlers aged 33 and over. The last time England had 19 wickets taken by bowlers aged 33 and over was when 34-year-old Jim Laker took 19 on his own at Old Trafford in 1956.
What a way for Jimmy to go out if he was to take 19 wickets. A 19-wicket match at Old Trafford.
That would be incredible.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Chris, let's just reflect quickly on that. The women's match. England had come back from 6 points to nil down, four points for winning the test for Australia. Then each of the limited over games is 2 points each. Australia won the first T20. England won the next two T20s and the first ODI. Yeah. And then they lost an agonising game by 3 runs. At Southampton. So I didn't realise you went on TMS during that game.
So what happened was I was there. We were there partly because my father-in-law is turning 80 tomorrow, and we were there as part of his 80th celebration. We went down with him. He's a Hampshire man. He had like trials for Hampshire as a bowler when he was younger, and so at my wife's suggestion, I sort of pulled a few strings and got Charles Dagnall, God bless him, took us up to the comm boxes and stuff so he could have a look around, him and my young daughter. And so Henry Moran and Alex Hartley were on comms and went, what are you doing here? And then brought me over to have a chat for a second. So it wasn't planned, but it happened. but it was an extraordinary game. It was... it's funny because I sort of felt like that the game was lost much earlier than in fact it was lost. They fought back from halfway through. Well, I think partly when Tammy Beaumont went to that astonishing ball from Alana King, and you thought, well, there's no, like, if Tammy can't do, she's not great against spin, but no one could have dealt with that ball. And you just thought, oh, well, there's a whole new thing happening here. Partly because Australia finally had understood that spin was the way to deal with the England batters. They even opened with spin, in fact, they were bowling second, which if I were Australia in that match, that's what I would have chosen to do for precisely that reason, that, you know, their spinners are the ones who are going to do the damage at that moment. And then particularly when Danny Wyatt got out, I just thought, oh, well, this is slipping away. And Nat Siverbrunt, one of the great cricketer, one of the great England cricketers of all time, was sort of under the strike rate. She was knocking it about under 100 for most of her remarkable century. And then it was only towards the end that it began to kind of tick back up, and you sort of felt in the last five overs or so, oh, they could do this. But it wasn't to be. I think far too much blame has been put on the shoulders of Lauren Bell, whose final over to Georgia Wareham went for an unbelievable 26. It was just extraordinary. It's one of those final overs where the first ball goes for a six and you go, oh, it's going to be that, is it? This is going to be a Carlos Brathwaite. That's what this is going to be.
I was playing a game of village cricket and we were following the score in the pavilion, and we got to the final over and they were thinking, oh, well, that's not too bad to...
Yeah.
To, end up 260, 265, and then absolute... I was at Edgbaston last year when Jasprit Bumrah in the Test match took, including extras, 35 off and over from Stuart Broad, and it felt like there was just some kind of mind-bending glitch in the universe of a guy who'd been traditionally one of international cricket's shittest batsmen. But, I mean, this again, it felt like, oh, that might be... the moment, but then they got to so close.
They did get so close. 15 off the last over was what was required. And I just think they didn't quite rotate the strike right in the last few overs between Sarah Glenn and Nat Siverbrunt. But, like, I mean, it's fascinating. And I think this is the case across both of the Ashes, that actually what you've got is four teams who aren't completely at their best. That there are always little bits that are slightly wrong with them. In an almost kind of... Like there's no way of solving the problem. It seems to be like a bent piece of wood. You nail one end down, the other end pings up. And that's partly what's making the series so fantastic, because you have got an Australia, the women's Australian team, who are just sort of not used to losing. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that England took a T20, a white ball series off Australia. Nobody's done that for ages. No. Like, they just, not for, is over it 2017?
250 years, I think.
It's roughly. Absolutely bonkers. Yeah. And so, they get to take the Ashes back. But if the game at Taunton, which starts in a couple of hours, is won by England, they will have two white ball series off the greatest sporting team ever.
So basically, England have won. Let's just go with that.
Georgia Wareham scored 37 runs. This is a great stat. Of 14 balls with a strike rate of 264.
Mad, isn't it?
that is absolutely brutal.
But imagine having that mindset. Imagine, it's right at the end, and you've got a bowler in who's been really economical and taken three wickets, and just going, I'm just going to hit it, mate.
Yeah.
it's something else to be able to do that.
It has been that does feel like a landmark series. I was a bit sceptical of the two Ashes happening simultaneously, just because I thought it would have been better for the women to have sort of clear space for their own series. But I think it's worked really well because the formats are so different, that we have the multi-format in the women's, and they've been sort of played in the gaps generally. There's been a couple of days with simultaneous cricket, but it's just sort of created these sort of twin parallel narratives of Australia getting ahead, England coming back. It's been a glorious summer of cricket. Right, we need to wrap this up because I have to get the train to Manchester. By the time you hear this, I will be in Manchester with my pencils and stats of truth at the ready. Nish, prediction?
I think England have got the team balance right. I think a huge amount is going to depend on if Stuart Broad still has the hoodoo on David Warner, because I think the Australians are being stymied by the fact that he's, with one exception, managed to get out pretty cheaply every game, and it immediately puts pressure on Smith and Labuschagne, and I think without Warner's cover, it's not coincidence that particularly Labuschagne isn't scoring at the same rate that we're sort of used to. But I think England might win, but I think that may be more in hope than expectation, because I sort of think this series deserves to go to a decider.
Yeah, it completely deserves to go to a decider. And I say that as someone who has tickets for 3 days of the Oval. But I also think that, I don't know, man. I think it depends to a large extent on how Jimmy's game goes, and also whether the Aussies have figured out the cheat codes to Mark Wood.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't have a good game, and if they've figured out how to play Woody, then I think it will go their way. But yeah, I mean, who can say? That's the whole thing about this. It's pointless predicting. The only prediction that you can actually make with any real sense of certainty is it's Manchester. It'll be a rained draw.
Well, I've written my prediction down on this bit of paper. I will reveal it to you after the test match. Thank you for listening. We will have daily Bugle Ashes Zoltz casts during the course of this test match. Producer Chris is away, but we will we'll do some Q&As via Twitter, so do send me your questions for that, for your morning blast of Ashes stats. Thanks to Chris and Nish. May the cricket be with you. Amen.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.